Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for joining me today. It's Monday, and I love Mondays, and we're going to have a great hour coming up with Vince Miller. He's in studio. He's written a book called 20 Lessons That Build a Leader, a Conversational Mentoring Guide. Vince has been on the show several times in the past, and he's just an absolute delight. So get prepared for that. That's coming up. And I want to thanks to my first hour guests, Patrick Albanese and Sheila Heen. If you missed any of that, I do recommend myfaithradio.com. It's the best place to go check it out. If you want to hear that. And it's my friend Bob's birthday today. I remember I moved from one school to another, from first grade into second grade. All right, so day one in second grade, my mom takes me to school. I'm in my little uniform, and I get brought into the class, and this kid comes up to me and says, "Hey, my name is Bob. You want to be friends?" And at that point, I really didn't have any other offers, so I said, "Sure." And now today, he's one of my oldest, dearest friends, best man at his wedding. You know what? They always say, I think it was Billy Graham that said, imitating Christ is opening the door to friendship. So whatever age you're at, it's always good to just introduce yourself to somebody and say, hey, you want to be friends? Goes a long way. Let me take a 60-second break. I'll be back with Vince in a minute.
Some emails are tedious, but some emails can be fun. Keep up with all your favorite shows and connect with Faith Radio by subscribing to our email newsletter. We'll send regular updates with opportunities for live events and interactions with our hosts, shows you might have missed, and more exclusive content just for subscribers. Sign up to receive our newsletter today under the Subscriptions tab at MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com. It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey.
It is a joy to contribute. We're glad to participate, knowing that the station continues to get better and better. It goes farther and farther, and we're just getting the good news out. So that's one of the major donations that we like to make, and we like to encourage people to do the same thing.
We get far more out of it than we'd ever be able to put into it, I can assure you that.
Thanks for being part of the family of Faith Radio.
Welcome back to the show. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Vince Miller strolled into the studio like he's done many times before. Vince, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
So, you know, we were just chatting about, you know, my friend Bob, because I wanted to make a point that, you know, you do have to be intentional when you're seeking males, male friendship.
Yeah.
This great ability to say, I'm going to just introduce myself and I want to become friends with you. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, it's not too much to ask, is it? I mean, we should just really look at people and say, hey, I want to get to know you. Hey, let's develop. I had something really interesting happen today. I was at the gym. Okay, I was working out. I had my headphones in like everybody else does, ignoring everybody else, right? And this guy walks up to me, makes a beeline to me, and I thought he knew me, so I took my headphones off and pretended like I knew him, right? You know?
In your phony way.
Yeah, in my phony way. And I go, hey, how's it going? And he reaches out his hand. He says, I just want to give you a compliment. And he gave me this really nice compliment on the way that I was doing my exercise.
Ah, nice.
And he said, you know, are you a power lifter? And I said, no, I'm a CrossFit athlete. And he goes, oh, I can tell by the way that you're doing these activities. You have good form. And I get concerned about people in here sometimes. And I'm a powerlifter myself. And we had a 15-minute conversation right there. And I just thought he introduced himself. His name was Chad. So, Chad, if you're listening today.
No, he's not.
No.
But anyway, yeah.
But you see how that works? It's real simple, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to make same-sex friends, you know, men in particular are not good at this, you know, you have to be intentional.
Yeah, you just walk up to someone and invite yourself into their life, basically.
Well, I mean, some of my friends that I've made over the years are people who I admired greatly. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'd like to get to know that guy. Then you end up meeting them in circles and you go, hey, let's grab coffee sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, very, very simple. We need to do it more often because we need to get out of our comfort zone, build relationships. We need other male relationships, right? And healthy ones, and ones where we can pull things out of people that we want to be in our own life. If I see somebody else's marriage that I admire, I should want to get to know that guy and understand how he's been able to develop that relationship with his wife or lead his children or his business or his friendships. All that stuff is very important, I think, for guys.
I'm completely in agreement. And friends are always a little hard to make for some people. So I want to be super sympathetic for people that struggle making friends, because there's an incredible amount of loneliness going on in the world today. And we don't know how to go about it, it seems.
And it really is quite simple, though. I mean, Jesus made it really simple. He didn't have friends, and he said, come follow me. And then people followed him, right? I mean, that's how it works. And we just select people out of the group that we want to spend time with and start investing in them, and they invest in us. And it's a mutual relationship where we both win. Very important.
Don't they say that you are a composite of the five people you hang out with the most?
Of course. I think that that's a very good summation of kind of how we live life. You know, I mean, I think about the five people I spend time with most. They're my family members. And of course, we become like one another, right? The way that we talk, the way that we argue, the way that we love, the way that we share, the way that we give. I mean, all those things, we become like each other. And then we move out of the house, and hopefully that impacts the world in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. Right? But Vince, I know all the work you do in men's groups and speaking to men all over the country and mentoring them, that men in, by, I don't want to make sweeping generalizations here, but I think I'm about to. Men have a difficulty going deeper.
I think they do. In fact, it's quite interesting. Like if you know, I'm speaking to these men's groups like you're talking about, and one of the things that are the activities I'll have them engage in right in the beginning is turn to a neighbor, introduce themselves, look themselves in the eye, and get to know that other person. And it was as if I asked them to do the most uncomfortable activity they ever thought about doing in the in their entire life, right? And yet they will say at the end of my time that I have spent with them, often I will see that they've built relationships that they so desperately want to build but want to be given the permission to do it because it's too awkward for them to do it. It's kind of scary because it feels like dating, to be quite honest, and they don't want it to be not masculine, right? They don't want it to be forced. They don't want to be invasive. So there's all these reasons and excuses they have for not engaging in relationship with other guys, yet it's probably the one thing that's going to take them the furthest in their spiritual development is some kind of relationship that can push them farther. Like even you and I know you got guys in your life, right, that are
a lot
always pushing you, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're generally open with them, I bet.
Well, that's when I stopped taking the calls.
And that accountability does something,
yeah, it
though.
Does.
If it doesn't do something right away, eventually you think about it and process it, and then you come back to it, and you kind of go, yeah, you know, maybe Steve was right, Dave was right, Mike was right, you know, about how to handle these situations, you know, and those men make you better. Right.
Yeah, I mean, every guy should have almost his own personal board of directors, a group of men that basically would have authority to pull rank on you if you're doing something really stupid. I mean, we all have so many blind spots that you would want someone to step in and say, you got to stop.
Oh, man.
And to which you would yield and say, thank you.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm really grateful for some of the relationships in my life. Some of these guys will say, you know, that's probably not a good idea, you know, or... you idiot, knock it off. Or sometimes that's the voice of my wife, who I refer to as the Holy Spirit at times. Like, she'll pull out of me and is able to say things to me that's more direct, and I have to be willing to be taught in that moment, right? I have to take that information in and decide if it aligns with the truth, right? But those people always make me better. We got to listen to those people because they make us sharp.
Yeah, but the whole blind spot thing, we all have four or five blind spots that we don't know they're blind spots because we can't see them.
You can't see. There's a lot of things you can't see. You learn this in driver's ed, don't you? I mean, like, you have all these blind spots. You have a forward view. You get a little bit of a rear view with the rear view mirror. Then you got these side view mirrors that make up the other kind of couple of percent, but you always have a blind spot. You have a natural blind spot in your eye, and we have blind spots in our life. Just like we can't really see a true depiction of ourselves, right? Other people help to fill in those blind spots and speak truth to us about how we're acting, how we're leading, how we're behaving, how we're loving, all those kinds of things. We need those voices, and I need them in my life. It makes me a better man.
Did you have a lot of friends growing up?
I can't imagine. I think people, we were great friends. It was awesome. I had this friend named Bob too, you know.
Nice.
A figment of my imagination at times. But, you know, I had some friends when I was growing up, but not, I wouldn't say, it took me a while to really find great friends, you know. And I think we have a few lifelong friends. Like I got one in Texas. His name is Mark. I would call him a lifelong friend. He's the kind of friend who will text me, will stay in contact with me, with whom I can share my secrets, my dark sin, my challenges, things that are going on in my marriage with my kids. And then he will text me back to even check in on me. You have no idea how that feels to receive a text from some guy after you've already shared something and he follows up with you and asks, how's it going? It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Great feeling.
You want to talk about the book?
Sure, we can talk about that.
Okay, let me take a little break. We'll come back. Vince Miller's in the studio. His book is called 20 Lessons That Build a Leader. We'll take a short break and be right back. We're going to be talking about some lessons today that build a leader, conversational mentoring guide with Vince Miller, a new book he's got out. I've got one in my hand, and I've got a couple more copies to be awarding to some listeners. I think I've got three copies. Does that sound about right, Vince?
Yeah, we can give them away.
Yeah, awesome.
Let's do it.
So if you want to get in the drawing for that, send me an email at bill@myfaithradio.com, and we'll get the drawing out today. We'll get the winners out today. And then also make sure you put in the subject, 20 lessons as the subject, and then make sure you put your name and address. So if you win, we can send it to you. Okay. That'd be great. Now, Vince, as I open up and read your introduction about your history, it involved a fair amount of anxiety, which if you had that as a young kid, you were abandoned by your drug using father at age 2, and you grew up with a challenging and anxiety-producing environment. You talked about having some night terrors.
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, I really struggled with dreams or nightmares that were, you know, I would call demonic today. I wasn't a Christian when I was a kid, so, you know, I couldn't differentiate that. But night terrors, I mean, there were constant images and stories playing in my mind of me being, well, murdered, actually.
Yeah, death was always the central theme in these nightmares, wasn't
it? Yeah, always a theme, and it's always me being chased down. It always ended in an awful climax. I just remember that it was difficult to just even endure it. And of course, this, as I did some therapy when I was younger as a child, but as I got older, it turned into, well, insomnia. So long periods of time where I wouldn't sleep. I mean, sometimes weeks would go by without any sleep. I was extremely productive between midnight and 6 a.m, unlike most people. And I could function pretty normal throughout the day until this anxiety continued to kind of boil over, and it started to affect my behavior with other people, specifically my family. I could see it starting rolling off into more and more anxiety, because I really do believe that anxiety builds over our lifetime to a point where taking on more responsibility, more leadership, doing more, families growing, marriages new for me, all this kind of stuff, and it just produces ownership and anxiety that I was taking upon myself. And so it did really spiral out of control for me.
Mm-hmm. So if that started as a kid, that means it's probably in your system still. I'm trying to figure out how to say that. And there's things today that trigger that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would be things that would trigger that?
You know, it would be moments where I feel like I'm losing control. You know, I found that one of the trigger things for me was when people told me I did a good job with something, like that a boy kind of a thing, like you're doing a great job.
Oh,
really love
you.
Well, it made me want to produce more. And I realized that it made me feel like I was more in control. And to be in control, I had to do more, produce more, do it better, lead better, perform better. You know, you do some performance stuff and you understand how that kind of feeds the fuel for the human ego and drives you to want to be better and better and better. I mean, everybody wants to be better, right? But, you know, unfortunately, that becomes a trigger to trigger this anxiety of this performance need. And, man, it just continued to grow. And then finally, I just had a moment with God and I said, man, I got to deal with this thing because it's impacting my marriage and my children.
Mm. Now, some of that's just called life, isn't it? I mean, if you sell shoes at the mall and you got to sell X amount of pairs of shoes every week, you feel that pressure.
Yeah, you would think there is this natural part of life where we experience anxiety, unfortunately, right? And this life, in its natural sense, does produce that. I think it's designed to produce some anxiety is good, right? Like, you know, putting off your paper to the last second, right? Like you guys used to do in college. I never did that. But putting your paper off into mm-hmm. the last second produces anxiety that causes you to perform better, right? But there are some levels of anxiety that are not necessary, where the tension begins to build so much that it actually we're gonna snap the tension and we lose it. That's what we say, we lose it. So I think some anxiety is good. It's just certain levels of it. I was experiencing levels of it that were clearly unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing better now?
I am. I kind of had a carefrontation. God had a carefrontation with me, is the way to put it.
Yeah.
And I finally decided I can't live like this. I can't live sleepless nights. I can't live with this anxiety. And so finally, I just started to deal with it with prayer, believe it or not. I just started rolling out of my bed in these anxiety-producing nights and rolled out of my bed onto the floor, and I started praying, and I realized that it would dissipate over time. You know, 10, 15 minutes in, I would end up the anxiety would be lifted. It felt like I was handing it over to Jesus, like he invites us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it would roll off me, and I would get lost in these very long episodes of prayer, which, by the way, I felt were a kick in the gut for Satan. I took basically that weakness that he had given me, that had become a thorn in my flesh, and turned it against itself, and it became a way I fell in love with God all over again.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
Let's get into some of the chapters of your book, 20 Lessons, or one of the lessons is discovering values. Even though you don't state them, you have them. Say more about that.
You know, I think that people are often not aware that there's things kind of underneath the surface driving us. We all have that, just like my anxiety was driving me, right? Mm-hmm. We all have values that are driving us. And the interesting part of this chapter, I think, is the fact that we need to be conscious of those things, because those things really are quietly leading our lives, whether we are aware of them or not. So, for example, you have values. We all have values sitting in the studio right now, and they're driving our behaviors. And when we align those values with people that don't share those values, we often have conflict about them without even knowing that, right? So take, for example, a guy or a gal who couples their Christian values inside of a business that doesn't share their values, right? They usually get agitated or frustrated and eventually leave that company, by the way. And I think it's important for us to become conscious of them, to know them, to state them, and to live by them on a daily basis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And great quote by Roy Disney that said, it's not hard to make decisions when you know what your values are. So, as we talk about values, what are some of the best ways? What's a diagnostic? How do we discover our values?
I think that, you know, there's all kinds of ways that we can do this. Number one, I think one of the ways is we can sit down with someone who can help us to kind of understand who we are and look back at us. We talk about these blind spots, mm-hmm. right? It'd be great if we had a mentor in our life to kind of guide us through this process and ask us questions about life, because really a lot of these values are birthed at a very young age out of us because of experiences and cultural nuances and spiritual beliefs and passions, right? So we need people to do that. I think other things that kind of help draw this out are those really difficult moments that we have in life that, to be honest, draw these values to our attention, right? Like if we have a really awful experience, I like to call them crucibles, they will draw this moment out of us and mm-hmm. we'll go, that is a value I will never offend again, right?
Right.
You probably had crucibles in your life. Anyway,
oh, sure.
I think these kinds of things and people and resources kind of help us to discover these things. So mentors, crucibles, you name it.
Yeah, because when we talk about, you know, discovering your values, we certainly are not suggesting that your values don't come from God's word, because that's
right.
the only place they come from. But mm-hmm. but as we discover mm-hmm. how we, you know, you talk about the crucibles, you've had something in your life that's happened that mm-hmm. drives a stake in the ground for you.
Right.
And you go, exactly. I'm never going to do that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, well, and that becomes a piece of your value system, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It kind of fuses itself deep into you, which is why people have pet peeves, right? Like, so if you have a pet peeve, often this is driving after some sort of value that you have. Like, I remember one day I was sitting in a group with a group of guys, and they got really irritated that people with big trucks backed into parking spots, right? And I was like, why is that a pet peeve for you? As we were sitting in the Caribou, which is our coffee shop that we're meeting in, we looked out the window and everybody that pulled into Caribou on that day backed into their parking spot, which I just thought was laughable. But he was irritated every time he saw it.
That's funny.
You know, so we have these little things that draws some attention to maybe values that we have or experiences that we've had in the past that are kind of nuanced for us.
Well, maybe one of your values is I'm always going to be punctual. You know, maybe you had an experience in the crucible that you go, I dropped the ball so bad and I'm never going to do this again. And you can then be depended upon to be on time. If people say, well, I'm meeting Vince for coffee, oh, he'll be right on time. Mm-hmm. And that becomes part of your reputation. And that becomes part of your values, right?
Absolutely.
That fall
you must
that
know
category?
My wife. You know my wife, don't you?
I don't know Christina. But why would you? Is she that way?
Oh, man. She is irritated when I am 2 minutes late. And, of course, you know what I value? I value relationships. So if I want to linger a little while, oh, can you see the match there in values?
Yeah.
So we've had to learn to kind of bump up against each other with these kinds of values. You know, relationships for me, punctuality for her.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
interesting marriage moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's talk about credibility. Mm-hmm. That's a key lesson in leadership is credibility. So say more about that.
Yeah. You know, credibility is really interesting because you can build it really, it's built over time. It's lost in seconds. Is it not?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It goes away so quick.
It does. I mean, we've seen a lot of failure recently by major senior pastors leading large churches in our country, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And you know, their climb to that place that they were in life took them a long time to get there. And then suddenly, whether true or not, right, they just lost everything. And it's really sad to see that happen, but this is a truth of life. Credibility, hard to build, easy to lose.
Yeah, and if you are a leader, how do we safeguard against that?
We were just talking about that, right? I mean, this would be great. You got to put yourself around people that will hold you accountable.
That's true.
That's how we build credibility, is with brothers and sisters in the faith that care about us, to speak truth to us.
Yeah.
And we need those truth tellers to help us to build that. We need to not see them as our enemies. These people are our friends. And by the way, even bad feedback that is delivered poorly can be good feedback for building credibility, right? So we need to learn those lessons. Great leaders understand
that. People with strong character who are standing on the field with you and that are looking around and checking the blind spots and and being able to receive criticism, too. Being able to receive feedback is important. That's not easy for men to do.
Yeah, it's not easy for anybody to do.
Oh, well, I know, but men in particular seem to have a little bit of problem with that.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a little break. Vince Miller's in studio. His new book, 20 Lessons That Rebuild a Leader. Got a whole bunch of emails flying in with people that would like to get one of these three copies available. So you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. The winner will be determined tonight. And we'll take a short break. If you've got a topic or something you'd like to add into the discussion I'm having with Vince, you can feel free to send me a text. 877-933-2484. Be right back. Vince Miller's in studio. We're talking about his book, 20 Lessons That Build a Leader, a conversational mentoring guide. And so far, so good, Vince.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Mm. Let's move on to something you call astute discernment.
Mm.
Say more.
Okay, discernment. Well, you know, I need more of that.
Yeah.
You know, in particular. And I think really discernment is something that can be built over time. It's challenging for some. I think it comes easy for some people, by the way. I think people with a strong moral compass and deep character, and they keep themselves really in tune with God's word, clearly, I believe, have a tighter moral compass, therefore have better discernment. I have met people that have unruly amounts of discernment that I kind of entrust in my life in conversation with me. And I'll even ask them, how would you handle this? How do you look at this particular situation? Help me to understand the nuances. And, you know, I need people like that in my life. Honestly, I've realized there's certain kinds of people I need in my life to help me to be sharper. This mm-hmm. is one of those things that I don't feel like I have a lot of sometimes.
You said that one of the principles of becoming a discerning leader is they have a cunning curiosity. I like that.
You like that?
I do like that, yeah.
I think, you know, I think people that have a curiosity about things often want to know how things work. Therefore, wanting to know how things work, they like to take things apart and put them back together again to try mm-hmm. to understand it. And while there may be multiple ways to put things back together again, there's obviously one way that will be better than others, and you'll get to use all the parts, right?
Yeah, but they also will ask questions about you, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're very inquisitive. They have an inquisitive nature. They'll help you look at things with different perspectives, you know, different viewpoints that help you to see things from different angles. My grandfather was kind of that way. He was able to take a situation, take it apart, ask good questions, and then say, now, how do you think you should handle it? Mm-hmm. Which was always great application mm-hmm. for me.
And is discernment something that starts, you start developing it at your mother's knee?
I don't think so.
When does that happen? I mean, are you born with it, or is it something you have to develop?
You know, I think, I have this Christian worldview that says to me that, you know, basically we are completely broken until we are redeemed by God and indwelled by the Holy Spirit. And then there's this voice of his conscience that's speaking to us, that's aligning with his truth. And of course, I don't believe that we can find truth on our own. I believe that God has to disclose that truth to us. So I think discernment is harder to come by, because if you spend time with people that deeply know God's word, their discernment, I think, goes farther and longer than anybody else's. So mm-hmm. I think it's something that's built over time in a relationship with Christ mm-hmm. around truth, right?
Yeah. Now, Vince, earlier in the show, I was talking to Sheila Heen about conflict management, and that's also a subject you tackle a little bit. I mean, it is inevitable, but you say how you manage it matters.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, one of the first things I think you really got to do when you manage really your conflict is you got to manage yourself around it. So, you know, I was driving home from Easter the other day, and we have 5 drivers in our family. They were all in the car, from my youngest 15 to me, who's the oldest. And you will not believe the conflict that was had in that vehicle during that 4-hour drive. It was mm-hmm. awful. But I found the first thing that I really had to do was manage myself, my own anxiety. You know, I'm an anxiety guy. I've already shared that with you.
Didn't you say you were almost in a couple of car accidents? I mean, in your life.
Oh,
you've had car accidents, then.
I've had severe car accidents, one where I almost didn't live. And so
you come by this honestly, don't you? Yeah. This whole idea of let's be making sure we're safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I look at the car as the vehicle, and driving the vehicle as a deadly weapon, whereas not everybody looks at the same way I do, right? Mm-hmm. And therefore, because of that, I really got to manage my anxiety when I get in anybody's vehicle and watch how they drive, right? Not only my own 15-year-old son who's driving a deadly weapon, right? So I really, that's where it begins with me, is really managing myself. And then I have to lean into conversations, and how I have those conversations when I'm managing that conflict is very, very important, because it's less about what we're trying to agree about. It's more about how it's being said, isn't it? And mm-hmm. man, I got to be honest, I don't always handle conflict the best.
Mm. Is that tone?
For me, it's the anxiety thing, and then it comes out of the tone. I almost got to bite my tongue and really process what I'm thinking and how I'm feeling before I open my cake hole and say mm-hmm. what I'm about to say, unfortunately. And you can see anxiety is my sin, man. I just really, unfortunately, it's my weakness.
Okay. I appreciate that transparency. Let's talk about resilience, because that's a word that I've sort of had in my head this year. I would like to be more resilient. I've been saying that to myself.
Mm.
So say more about emotional resilience.
Well, you know, I think that when it comes to things like resilience, those are things that we build, right? Like, we just don't come by resilience overnight. It's something that's built over a long period of time, and we prove it out. And one of the ways I think we really prove it out is through the facing into our fears, the things that we're really challenged by, right? Because when we want to become resilient in life, we have to lean into the things that scare us, I really do believe, and the things that we're scared of doing for a long period of time, right? And so we have to just keep repeating it and taking one step at a time and really building that into our life, I believe, in the same way that Jesus and his disciples did it, right? Mm-hmm. One step at a time, one day at a time, one moment at a time. That is a Rocky quote as well, right?
So, so what if you don't feel like you're in very good touch with your emotions and they're kind of all over the map and your ups and your downs and all over this? So part of having resilience is being emotionally aware.
Yeah.
What if you feel like you don't have a lot of control over that?
Yeah, I know. I think some people have a harder time managing their emotions, but we really got to get in touch with it. I think it isn't so much about managing them and forcing them to come out a certain way. It's about acknowledging that we feel a certain way, believe it or not. I really do think that it's okay to have emotions and it's okay to share them. How we do it is important, but you know, even in my relationship with my wife, you know, as we get into a heated debate once in a while, right? Her with me with her, me being aware that I'm feeling a certain way and telling her that I'm feeling that way, right? Helps me to understand her. And I think it's important that we understand mm-hmm. each other. And so that's how we get in touch with this ability to really build this emotional resilience mm-hmm. is to just understand that we're having these feelings.
Were you not getting your way?
Probably. Oh, you're just going to stay in this pause here for a little bit.
I'm just hanging you out to dry, pal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love my wife, and sometimes I don't get my way, and sometimes she doesn't either, and that's okay.
Yeah. You know,
we have these moments, right?
Let's move on to accountability, because that's one of the other 20 lessons that build a leader. And well, you say, don't fight it. We were designed for it. I couldn't agree more.
Oh, man. You know, isn't it funny that God is a God who holds people accountable? I mean, it's a character trait of God. Like, there's sin in the garden. He holds everybody accountable, man, woman, and the serpent. Mm-hmm. And at the very end of the Bible, he says he's the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He's going to come back to pay recompense to all people for the wrong that they have done. I mean, I love this about God. He holds people accountable, but for some reason, as human beings, we're scared of it. And the funniest thing about it is you don't see a lot of it, unfortunately, in the church. We should see more of it in the church. I mean, when is the last time you've been held accountable for anything in your church? Yet, it's the one factor that makes us all better the most. You know that accountability drives results. It does. So if someone says, I'm going to expect this from you on this date and time, you're probably going to do it. Otherwise, you're going to protest it, right? But if we did that in our spiritual life, and not in a negative way, but a very positive way, think about the results that would happen in your life. You know, I want to challenge you to pray every day. I want to challenge you to read the Bible every day. I want to challenge you to listen to Faith Radio every day and your show, Bill, and because it makes us better, right? Like that little bit
of
accountability.
Not arguing that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. See, it's a great show.
Yeah.
So,
how do we invite honest feedback?
Okay, I think feedback is probably one of the hardest lessons to learn, but, you know, feedback is something we need to learn to crave and to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were even asking for feedback. I was listening to you during the break, and you were asking for feedback on how to handle certain things, and someone was giving you feedback as well, you know, and I noticed the way that you guys interacted on it, and I think it's healthy. But we need to invite this into our life because it makes us better. And while we think of feedback as always this negative experience, feedback is both positive and negative, right? Mm-hmm. It's both positive and growth-oriented is probably a better way to say it. And we need to invite it from people's lives. Like, you know, I was recently talking with my 15-year-old son, and I was saying, what can I do better as a dad? Oh, that was interesting. That was,
yeah.
And it was interesting to hear his perspective. And I would say there were things that I need to do better that he shared with me that I could see from his perspective. Feedback is that thing that discloses those blind spots that we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier, right?
Yeah.
And so we need to crave it in our lives, right?
Sometimes when I hear someone start with, can I just be brutally honest?
Mm.
Most of the time they're more brutal than they are honest.
Yeah, that's not the right way to invite feedback into people's lives, you know, to be brutally honest. I think what it is you're saying you've just held up all this information for years and I'm going to deliver it in 5 seconds here to you. And can you just please smile while I deliver it to you? No, like, we need to be doing this all the time in gentle ways. And by the way, I think we need to find better ways to deliver it, not just ask for it, but to deliver it. It's not so much what we're saying, it's how we're saying it again. And even how we're inviting it. So,
yeah, it's That's a tough one. I'll be honest. I mean, it's. I think we're all nervous to make a suggestion because we don't want to tank somebody, and we don't want to hurt their feelings, and we need to have the rest of the time be productive. You know, so it's a tricky one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the state we currently are residing in, Minnesota, and it's Minnesota nice to not ever say anything or give anybody ever feedback, right? Because, and I grew up in California where everybody gives you feedback to your face, you know.
Yeah.
So
let's chat about cultural intelligence. I don't even know where you're going with that one in the book, but so you're going to have to talk.
Yeah, exactly. So when I'm talking about cultural intelligence, I'm talking about being sharp and wise to the times, right?
Okay.
Like we're invited to really understand our day, to understand people, how they behave. And I think that's what's fun even about talking with you on certain subjects. I think that it's fun to listen to you because you're inviting us to be culturally intelligent as a people. Right. And that stuff matters. Like we need to be able to connect to everyday life. We need to connect to business. We need to connect to relationships. And even on this anxiety level, we're connecting with people on a grand level about what's happening, brass tacks in their life today. And that really matters. That helps us to be able to lead people effectively when we know what's going on in their heart, their mind, their soul.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact you quote Bruce Lee. The successful warrior is the average man with laser-like focus. Mm. Somebody said once when it came to martial arts, would you rather go up against someone who has done 1,000 kicks or one kick 1,000 times?
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
I don't, neither.
Yeah, neither for sure. But if some guy's done one kick 1,000 times, I'd be afraid of that guy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I want to focus on the focus after the break. So we'll focus on relentless focus when we come back. Vince Miller's in studio. He's written a book called 20 Lessons That Build a Leader, a conversational mentoring guide. We've got three copies to give away. So if you want to get in the drawing, many names have come in. We'll complete the drawing today. Email me at bill@myfaithradio.com. Just put 20 lessons in the subject line. Make sure you put your name and address so the winners can receive one via mail. Take a short break and be back. I have Vince Miller in studio. We're talking 20 lessons that build a leader, a conversational mentoring guide. And part of leadership, Vince, as you would agree, is being focused, like Bruce Lee talks about. Here's a Bruce Lee quote. The successful warrior is the average man with laser-like focus. Proverbs 4:25 says, let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. Seems like a focus verse as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to somebody on the phone today who I was coaching, who is a woman speaker who's working on her career, and she was listening to me recently, and she said, I love how simple that you made that talk, and I go, yep, I've learned the hard lesson of trying to talk about 40 things when really I can talk about one thing and make it crystal clear, and she says, yeah, that's funny how men all did this walking out of the room, and I was like, uh-huh. Why is that? Because I've learned the lesson of clarity. Like you can tell people to do 40 things and they'll do nothing, or you can tell them one because less is more, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always is.
Yeah. So how is it, Vince, when you feel like what you're doing all day is simply running from one problem to the next?
Oh, how do I feel?
Yeah.
Boy, there's nothing more exhausting than doing that. Some people are really good at doing those kinds of things though, right? Like running from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. Of course, that produces anxiety for me, but some people are really apt at being able to manage that many things. Unfortunately, when we're talking about leadership, people can only comprehend one thing, I think, at a time, one task at a time, one thing at a time. And as much as we say that some people can multitask, I think that's just a figment of our imagination. We have made that thing up. I just don't believe it's possible.
Mm-hmm. How do you look at that proverb that I quoted just a second ago? I'll read it again. Mm-hmm. Let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. Your gaze be straight before you. What is your gaze?
You know, we look at a lot of things in life, I think. And I think that clearly this proverb is speaking about keeping our eyes and gaze at the things of God and being focused on that. Clearly, he's talking about a spiritual focus and the gaze that's ahead of us. And we need a long view of life, right? And we need to be focused on that. I think that's what made Jesus's life so amazing, is he had this relentless focus on accomplishing his mission from day one to the final day,
yeah.
Right? And he would not deter from that, regardless of the attacks that he experienced or the odd behaviors from his disciples or the lack of followership or the challenges along the way, just that relentless focus of keeping the gaze up and looking forward in our life.
Mm. Yeah, it's the perfect role model, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, he was so focused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Even on the cross, even through, you know, some of the awful experiences of his life, which he saw just completely different than anybody else did.
Mm-hmm.
He saw him as opportunity to keep his gaze ahead.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right, continuously improving. That feels like pressure.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to get better. I think most people have this insatiable desire to get better. And by the way, I think that we don't outgrow the need to continuously improve.
I think
people are always searching, I think, throughout life for ways to better leverage their mission or God's mission for them in life. And, you know, even for those listeners who are retired today or away from work, we are most alive when we're continuously improving. And don't forget, there's the grace, the relentless grace of God that factors into this. But we should have a desire to want to do things better, to become to enter levels of mastery of our mm-hmm. field, of our discovery, and even understanding how to leverage our identity for the future of the kingdom. You know, all of those factors are important to continuously improving. We always can get better.
Vince, do you think that as you get older, you're less interested in looking foolish, which means I might not try new things because I don't want to look foolish?
You know, I think sometimes. I think it depends on how much is at risk for
okay.
us. If there's a lot at risk, we may not want to look as foolish. I think sometimes I encounter guys all the time that want to transition from, you know, job or career into calling. That's really where I'm encountering people a lot today. And they want to live a meaningful existence, but they're scared of taking the leap because they've really developed this understanding of this certain career path. But for them to move from just this career where they've always earned money into leveraging kingdom mission is too scary for them, so they self-disqualify, right? They say, oh, I can't do that because I'm not the pastor that he is or the leader that he is. And I keep saying to these guys, stop disqualifying yourself. You are plenty qualified if you're indwelled by the Holy Spirit, so take the leap. So when people talk to me about how I started Resolute or the organization I lead today, I left when I was 43, a very sane job that was paying well, and I took a big leap, and guys kind of ask me all the time, how did you do that? And I says, well, I had a spouse behind me, and I am a person that lives with lots of faith in the face of fear. And so we can't be afraid to take those leaps because we're probably going to miss out on the greatest experience of our life if we just embrace fear
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
How important is asking questions?
Hmm.
Do you think men ask a lot of questions? And if they do, what are they?
Yeah, you know, I think guys have difficulty in asking for help because asking for help means asking questions sometimes and being inquisitive. But I have learned that you can almost mentor yourself with really great questions of great people, right? You do that all day long. You're asking questions. And the funny thing is, I bet you sit on the other on the other end of the mic all the time learning, don't you?
Oh, all day long. I mean, love this job.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're just learning aggressively, right?
Yeah.
And I have learned that by asking other people questions that I want answers to, I can actually trick them into mentoring me for free, by the way, by asking them great questions. So turn to a CEO, you know, and ask them a question. Turn to a mother and ask her a question about how to raise kids. You know, turn to a friend who's struggled through an addiction that you're struggling to. Ask them a question. And oh, my goodness, the things that you'll learn from
yeah.
one another.
Yeah, ask a friend that, you know, has a circular saw how to build a deck.
Better than that, just ask him to do it.
Exactly. But you do grow by making mistakes, and you do grow by having obstacles come that you have to overcome. So I think we need to be reminding each other that those are okay.
Yeah, you know, we make mistakes all the time, and I actually believe it's okay for us to make mistakes because we learn another way how not to do something. How many times have I made mistakes in my life? And I think that fear that you're talking about is actually a fear of being embarrassed or being ashamed of making a mistake or being found out, maybe. But, man, we can sure learn some great things from one another because God has given us a wealth of wisdom that he wants us each to know.
Mm-hmm. Do you suffer from procrastination at all?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't. I don't put things off.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Do you?
I'm sure. Oh, yes. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. 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 Tell me, what's that like for you?
It's exhausting.
Is it?
Of course it is.
Do you put everything off to the last minute?
Or? No. I mean, people say that they work well under pressure. I think sometimes they work only under pressure.
Yeah. Is that you then? You like the pressure?
No. I need to pace it over time.
Okay.
Because I need to get something started in my head and then play with it, juggle it, and then see what happens a couple days later.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So everybody's a little bit different on how they deal with this one. I'm not a procrastinator, so I'm probably the opposite of you in this one leadership principle. But, man, it does draw things out of us, doesn't it, when we procrastinate or when we don't procrastinate, and some of those things are good or bad either way.
Yeah.
Right.
There are a few things as exhausting as the thought of an incompleted task.
Mm. Yeah.
It's exhausting.
You know, and that's the weird part is I can't put things off. I have to finish them. In fact, my family gets really irritated if I'm like wanting to finish something. I have to get it done because I feel this level of responsibility, and I actually create anxiety on the other end of the spectrum.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just like you experience it on the front end, I experience it on the back end.
That's interesting. And then where did that come from?
I don't know. I've got all kinds of problems, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So how do we bring about some changes? What are some baby steps we can take besides reading your book? Getting a copy of it.
Oh, man. Three
lucky people are getting a free copy.
I think that's so cool because I just believe in mentorship, and this is a tool that you can put in someone's hand where they can mentor somebody else or be mentored by somebody. Easy peasy. You don't even have to come up with content. You just read a chapter just like we just did. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just modeled what this looks like. You can pull great content out of people that you know and respect. These are guys building relationship with other guys, gals building relationship with other gals, us growing in relationship with one another. You talked about how do we build relationship right here. Just pick up a book and a resource and have a conversation.
Yeah. What about people who might be reluctant to mentor because that takes a lot of time and energy and that's scarce?
Oh, you know, I hear these two excuses all the time.
I don't know what to do.
See, there you go. I don't have time and I don't know what to do. And I think we need to take those excuses off the table because it's exactly that that's prohibiting the advancement of the kingdom. Like all of us, whether we're sitting here talking today or listening to the program, we are called to make disciples. We are called and invited into an incredible journey of mentoring others. And by the way, Jesus built his mission on it. It's the most natural thing that he ever did and the one thing he commanded us to do. Make disciples, make disciples.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are sitting. We're actually doing this today. We're engaging in it. And I think it's just beautiful when it happens, right? Like people are listening to us. Really, hopefully. And we're just mentoring one another, right? We're engaged in a mentorship conversation.
Mm-hmm. And one-on-one mentoring is pretty critical. It was in my life. It sounds like it was in your life, too.
Absolutely. Well, it's the way that we come to discover the truth of Jesus Christ. And if it wasn't a good plan, Jesus wouldn't have modeled it for us.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I just think it's so amazing how today we're sitting here having this conversation because of what Jesus did 2,000 years ago.
That's crazy.
Just think of it. It's crazy.
Fantastic. I was at a men's group once. It was like 400 men there. And the question was, how many of you came to faith because you heard a message in church? They went down the list until how many of you came to faith because one person met with you and shared the gospel? All the hands went up.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It's one-on-one mentoring.
It's always the way it was. It's always God's plan since the beginning of time, right?
I've got a couple more copies for Vince's book. We'll do the drawing, and we'll declare the winners today. So if you don't get a response from me saying you're a winner in the next 30 minutes, that means you probably didn't win. But we've got the drawing going to be taking place in about, I'd say, 5 minutes. So 20 Lessons That Build a Leader, a conversational mentoring guide. Put 20 lessons in the subject line. Email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, if you'd like to get in the drawing. Make sure you leave your name and address so we know where to send people who win. That wraps up the show. Thanks to all the guests. Thanks for listening. I hope you've had a great Monday. Thanks for sharing part of it with me. I always look forward to our time together. Have a great night, and I'll see you tomorrow. God bless. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.